It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Yes, guys, I'm Si. Welcome to Cardiff City World once again, and I'm delighted. Thrilled, no less. Very excited to be chatting about Cardiff season today with Mr. Paul Abbandato. How are you, my friend?
Very well, thank you. Good to be here.
Yes, indeed. So, for those of you who don't know, Paul is an award-winning journalist and author of multiple books, isn't it?
It is a few books, yeah. But no need to go into that.
No. There's plenty of other time to discuss those many, many stories. But we're here to talk about Cardiff today, Paul, and it's been a fascinating season. It's been like the most Cardiff season ever, I think, because I think like it started off, no one quite knew what to expect from the manager. And then we got off to a really, really strong start, playing some good football. And then it kind of, we had a bit of a bad patch and then got a bit better and then just kind of tailed off and been, people got frustrated with the playing style of late. Well, not even of late, probably since Christmas. From like an overall kind of view, how do you think he's done?
Well, I think you've summed it up quite well there, to be honest with you. I think overall he's done enough, I think, to deserve a new contract to build on the foundation. So that, but you know, he's not bulletproof here. And I think you've summed it up. I think that there was real excitement. It was, you know, rather than same old, you know, this was suddenly, you know, Cardiff were hopefully unearthing their own largely unknown manager from abroad who might just offer something different and take the club in a new direction. I thought the summer acquisitions were exciting, particularly given there was a transfer embargo, but I thought that Cardiff came well out of that. And then the football at the start, you know, three, you know, we can see how good they are in hindsight. But three of the early away games, well, the first three were Leeds, Leicester and Ipswich. And although I think there was only one win in five games at the start of the season, but I could see enough in the performance levels to think, and performance matters at that stage of the season, not at this stage where results are everything, but at that stage it does, because you can see how things will develop. And I could see, well, defeats will turn into draws and draws will turn into wins, because there was some excellent football play, particularly away to Ipswich, where Cardiff, I thought, thoroughly outplayed until Bullitt, I think, made, well, he admitted himself, he made errors with the substitutions, which saw Ipswich win that game in the end. There were patches away to Leicester, where I thought in the second half there was some excellent football, where Cardiff really took it to them. They were 2-0 up at Leeds. And, you know, results did turn around. There was a 4-0 battering of Huddersfield. Both derby games were won at home. And then, I don't know why, but for whatever reason, it just imploded.
Yeah.
It just fell off the rails. There was no gradual change. It just, you know, suddenly crashed and burned almost, you know?
Yeah, do you know, I almost thought that he overthought things a little bit at that point. So, like, I've been very pro all season, I've tried to be consistent in saying that yes, I think he should get a new contract, but no, he's not devoid of criticism,
yep.
And you should be able to say, I think he's got that wrong, or I've been, you know, this, that, and the other, without it being Fuller out sort of thing. Because social media age, everyone's like, you almost got to be on one side or the other. And I find that I'm not really. I think he's done very well with, you know, predominantly frees and loans. You know, he signed a couple in January, but at the start of the season, like, and frees and loans are generally either young players or players that other teams don't want. So you're, what that straight away is going to give you is a lot of inconsistency, I think. And I think at the start of the season, we were generally very consistent. And like you mentioned, it kind of just fell off a cliff very soon. And like, for me personally, one of the things which I've not complained about, but I've kind of said a lot before Christmas, I'll say, and then I'll say what I've been saying since Christmas, but before Christmas, one of my criticisms was there was a persistence with certain players who weren't, I didn't think, performing. But then other players were kind of subbed off or rotated when they were banging form. And that seemed to derail the form of the team. So just as an example, I think I've said all season, I think Josh Bowler can be a really good championship winger. But I think he'd be better on the left because he's quite direct. He's very skillful. And I think that he, if he just beat his man and put a cross in, I think he could be really effective. But I think him cutting in causes a bit of an issue for Colwell or whoever's in that place. And also Colwell, I think, has been probably him, NG, and maybe Carlin Grant largely have probably been our most consistent performers. Yet Reuben Colwell, every time he gets up a bit of steam, whether that's a couple of good games in a row or, you know, he's playing very well, he seems to be the one that comes off or gets rotated, whereas Josh Bowler will always be the permanent fixture on the right. And that, to me, is frustrating because what I feel like I've said a million times is if I can see this and other people can see this, why can't the manager? Like, I don't know. I think maybe that period where we did fall off a cliff, I do think there was a bit of overthinking, whereas at the start of the season, he kind of came in, he had his philosophy, he wanted to play possession football, we were pressing, which we no longer do, which is also interesting, changing the tactics. I don't know, where do you stand? Like, do you think there's a bit of overthinking in there, or do you think he's just, I'm not sure, lost certain players maybe? Or?
No, I don't think so, because despite the appalling levels of performance, and I'll repeat that word, they have been appalling levels of performance, home and away at times. And I've heard stories both on the grapevine and from Cardiff fans, he's lost the dressing room, all that sort of stuff. This team fights to the end for Errol Bullitt. That isn't a sign of a manager that's lost the dressing room to me. And despite the appalling levels of performance, they've still managed to pull out these remarkable victories with last gasp goals. I don't know, I think it's something more fundamental than that, but I don't think it's something that has to offer encouragement, because if Cardiff can be, as we speak right now, in a position where I think they're 11th on the table, with a possibility as we speak of even getting to 8th with a great end to the season, the final three games, they can do that having had that level of performance we've seen from November onwards. What happens when they turn that around?
Yeah.
You know? It really shouldn't be difficult to turn around that form at Cardiff City Stadium. I was looking at some stats the other day of the promotion teams under Malky Mackay and Neil Warnock. I think under Neil Cardiff, I think it was something like 18 of the 23 home games were won, or there were thereabouts, and under Malky it was something like 15, and the first 10 of those were won at home that season when we won the league. And I just think that, you know, with that Cardiff City Stadium factor, which should be a, we've seen it with big Cardiff games, we've seen it with Wales games, that should be a fortress for that team. But for whatever reason, it's not. Nerves seem to kick in with certain players, and the performance levels are awful. Now, a lot of that I put down to Bullitt's ultra-negative approach to those home games. He doesn't need to be playing two holding midfield players when Cardiff are playing Rotherham or Blackburn or Stoke at home, but he does. So I don't think Cardiff are on the front foot enough from the start, but the reason I say that, you know, I, like you, I've been a big Bullet man right from the start. I've reserved judgment a little bit more in recent times because of the style of football, because of some of the substitutions, the selection issues that you've raised, which I agree with you on. But it can't be difficult to turn that around, I don't think. And I think with some clever acquisitions in the summer, I would like to think there will be far more progressive football played under him, if you like, rather than the negativity that we've seen of late.
Yeah, I think as well, what you've got to bear in mind is, like you mentioned at the start, like, he asked, the way I always phrase it is, does he, or did, if you look at it from the club's point of view or the fans' point of view, either way, like, does he have enough credit in the bank from the start of the season for you to say, right, I've seen enough positive football that he can do it with the right personnel, if we can give him a bit of backing and a bit of this, that you're happy to go with him for another couple of seasons? Or has the sort of pre-Christmas fall off in performance and tactics enough for you to say thanks but no thanks? Now, to me, before Christmas, I thought we played. We were passing. Our passing had purpose, and I think that's a big thing that has been lost.
Yeah.
But of course, he lost Aaron Ramsey. He's going to be a big part of that. But then, the tactics have changed since, I would say, probably January time. So in the first half of the season, we pressed. We played possession football, but we passed the ball quicker with purpose. But we also pressed as a team. Now, since that FA Cup game against Sheffield Wednesday, there was a game, that's the one game, apart from the Swansea away, where when I've gone and done my sort of post-match video, where I've actually had a bit of a rant and been quite cutting. Because in that Sheffield Wednesday FA Cup tie, we were 1-0 down, I think, at the time, and Reuben Caldwell was the only one chasing the ball. Josh Bowler stood there like this, Robinson, I think it was, or, you know, there's a couple of them, and they just all sort of stood around. And Reuben Caldwell sort of goes from the left wing to the sort of centre back, and he's the only one. The rest of them are walking back, and there was a similar issue. It was this past Saturday. Play breaks down on the halfway line. Siopis is sprinting, and I mean, you've never seen a player busting a gut so much to get back in and defend. And all the two wingers and the other midfielder are just strolling, and you're just thinking, that's an issue if the players haven't got the want or the kind of push to get there, or they haven't got the ability to do. And I wonder whether the manager thinks that he hasn't got the right players to press, which I disagree with, because we did it at the start of the season. But I just can't work out the change in tactics, especially, like, if anything, like you said, I would like to have seen a change in tactics at home to be more aggressive. And when Turnbull came in, I was so excited, because I thought, here we go. You know, he's going to play alongside Siopis, and we're going to really see something, a good combination, which can play progressive football. And I think he's only done it twice for sort of 10 minutes at a time. It just, like I said, I mentioned the word overthinking. And
but in the game, in the recent game away to Birmingham,
yes,
Turnbull actually played, you know, he came on for the last half hour or so. And I thought, oh, crikey, he's going to take Reuben Caldwell away from 10 now.
Yeah, that's what
but
I thought.
He didn't. No. He kept Caldwell at 10. He played Turnbull at 8, and for 25 minutes...
You had Ashford on the right, didn't you?
Yeah, he had Ashford on the right. And for 25 minutes, Cardiff were suddenly playing really progressive football. They were keeping the ball comfortably. They were making the runs beyond the defenders and so on. And it was the best they played. That little pier was the best they played for some time. So it was crying out for that to be repeated against Millwall on Saturday. Cardiff were 2-1 down. And Reuben Caldwell gave a goal away. But that happens. I'm not hanging him for that. You know, no. It was a bad error by him, right? But it happens, yeah? They're 2-1 down. And just before the hour mark, two substitutions are made. And they were Ryan Wintle for Siopis and Deju for Mitre. So they were the most uninspiring substitutions imaginable, right? Number one, they were like for like. Number two, I'm not convinced they were better than the options on the pitch. But number three, it was crying out for Turnbull to come on for me for Joe Ralphs, yeah, and to play eight. And it was to repeat what happened at Birmingham, where he can get a bit of control in the eight position and sort of, you know, he and Ruben could then run the show between them, if you like. And for Ashford to come on for Bowler at that point and leave Mitre on the pitch. But those changes weren't made. And I just looked at that and I thought, you know, when you see something like that, you can, you know, Errol doesn't help himself.
Yes.
Amongst certain sections of the fan base who don't want him. Albeit, I can't put the sense on it. I think the majority, you know, a bigger number of fans want to keep him than don't. But I know a lot of respectable, what I call respectable Cardiff City fans. Mm-hmm. In other words, they're not the type to rant or change their mind game to game or anything like that. They just say, this is some of the worst football we've seen for 60 years, Paul, and we don't want it anymore, you know? So I don't think he helps himself with substitutions like we saw at Millwall. I thought that was bad management. Yeah, but as a general rule of thumb, given everything, I think it would be silly for Cardiff to go back to your very original question right at the start. How's he done generally? It's been a big learning curve for him, a first year in the Championship, and I think everything he's learned here, it would be silly for Cardiff just throw that away by getting rid of him and appointing a new manager now. I think they'd be better served keeping hold of Errol, getting some quality. Don't need the big numbers, because I think there's enough of a squad there as it is. They get some quality newcomers in. So I'm talking about centre-forward, obviously, a winger, a midfielder. And they obviously need, if they could get Matt Phillips back, that'd be brilliant. Yeah, to defence. But get some quality in there, and I'm told that he's telling people that with those sorts of figures in the building, he will play a more attacking style of football next season. But he would have to deliver that. You know, we can't keep seeing the negativity that we've seen in recent months. It's not weeks, it's months. The performance levels have been awful at times.
Do you know what's interesting about the style of play conversation, right? Is, say since January, we played exactly the same type of football, but we won 1-0, 2-1 here and there. I would argue that fans wouldn't be so focused on the style of football, because I would argue that under Malky Mackay, we didn't play the greatest of football. That season where we won the league was a lot of 1-0s, 2-1s. It was quite, what's the word? Pragmatic, absolutely.
That season.
But winning changes the
perception. Cardiff won the first 10 home matches that season. Yeah. And winning at home is different to winning away, because that's where the vast majority of the fans are watching the team. Yeah. That season, I think, again, as we speak, I think I'm right in saying that Harry Hinge and Carlin Grant are joint top scorers with around six apiece. That season under Markey, when Cardiff won the league, remember, there were three joint top scorers off the top of my head. It was Heiner Helgeson, I think it was Peter Whittingham and Aaron Gunnarsson with eight goals apiece. Or sorry, it was 8 or 10. I think it might have been as low as eight.
Yeah,
you know,
8 or 9. Something like
so
that.
It wasn't. We're not talking about prolific 20 to 25 goal strikers here like Jay Bothroyd and Michael Chopra and people like that. You know, there weren't that many goals scored under Markey, but you're right, they would churn out the wins. And he had a wonderful mindset. He had a wonderful mindset, Malky. You know, he kept saying, right, win here, just keep churning that until there aren't enough games for the other teams to catch us. And he was right. If ever there was an example of one game at a time, it was that season under Malky. So you're right, the football wasn't breathtaking at all. I think it was in the first season under Neil Warnock, or not the first season, the promotion season under Neil Warnock, right? Cardiff played a lot more direct, obviously, then, but what they had was really fast-flowing football in the final third of the pitch. Junior Hoylett was on fire, Kenneth Hall was on fire at times, Mendes Lang was excellent. And I think, but again, even in that season under Warnock, I think I'm right in saying that Patterson was the top scorer with 10 goals, you know?
Shit.
So we're not talking 20, 25 goal strikers here again.
No.
Strikers here again. But the football had the appearance. It was more exciting in the final third. You know, they did get it forward. And you mentioned earlier on about the passing with a purpose. That, to me, is the key to it. You know, I remember, you know, watching, say, Swansea's team under Steve Cooper with Joe Roden at the back and Mark Gwee and people, kind of Roberts, people like that. and they ping that ball around, yeah? With Cardiff, it's a very, very ponderous,
you know,
and I just don't think that that is with purpose. And I'll give you another couple of examples here. Against Birmingham, Aaron Ramsey had the ball sort of near, just inside his own half. And he did what Aaron does. He sort of twisted one way. There was a player on him. Then he twisted another. Then he twisted another way. You know, he kept hold of that ball for 10 seconds or so to try and get an opening. Yeah. He eventually sort of threw it through two players, I think, to Joe Riles. And it was played straight back to Gutas. And I just thought, as that happens, hang on, he's just taken out players here.
Yeah.
He needs to turn with that ball and shift it on, but it's gone through. Aaron could have done that himself 10 seconds earlier if he wanted to do that. So there's an example of, you know, they've got to move with greater momentum through that middle.
You need players. So, like, I love Joe Rawls, and I see through the channels and the content which I do, I see a lot of people saying, there was a guy on Sunday saying, Joe Rawls needs to go, he's not this, he's not that. And I said, no, I think Joe Rawls has been a fantastic servant. He's absolutely can be a massive asset to Cardiff.
Yeah.
But if we want to take the club and the team forward now over the next few seasons, you have to have a conversation about, is he coming to the end of his career? Like the latter stages, I mean, well, he's not finished. He can still contribute. There'll be certain games where he will need, I think he can start and be a good weapon. There's going to be more games where you maybe need him off the bench to settle things, to help the young players. But the conversation is, you probably need someone who can do what he can do, but a bit quicker, got a bit more legs, and a bit more aggressive. Well, I would argue that Turnbull ticks all of those boxes.
Oh, I'm not sure about that. I don't think he's aggressive.
I'm
not even sure he's got more legs, to be honest.
No, I don't know. He's quite quick. Maybe this is reading in the game.
I think that they'll be looking from outside to get somebody in that, you know. But the thing is that modern day midfielders generally, any midfielders always, but particularly in the modern era now where the game is so quicker because you can't pass back to your goalie and pick it up and slow it down anymore. You've got to have, midfielders have got to have almost 360 degree periphery vision. So they've got to be, when the ball comes to them, they've got to be able to turn on it and shift it on and have, you know, it can't just come back the first point of call.
It was the problem we had when Wintle was playing week in, week out, is it was just kept coming back.
Yeah.
And I think Ryan Wintle can be a good player for certain situations, certain games. But I don't want to see Cyopis, Wintle and Rawls as a flat three at one point we were seeing.
And therein is the problem that again, Errol, and again, he has to take responsibility as this is manager. He frequently has picked that as a triumvirate in the midfield.
It's never been a great.
And it's almost been insulting to the fans to see Wintle playing as 10 instead of Reuben Colwell at times. Absolutely. And it's not fair on Wintle. That's not his game.
Of course it's not.
You know, he can't play with his back to goal and turn it on. That, his game is a deeper role, you know?
Just quickly on that, just going back to Turnbull. I think it's been quite unfair on Turnbull. He's come in January. Everyone's just called, oh, he's supposed to be quite good. He's gonna help us. And then he's played in the 10. And half the time he's playing with his back to goal.
Yeah.
Whereas you see straight away, like you mentioned, against Birmingham away, coming from deep, and he's playing it into Colwell and Ashford, and then he's going to get the return ball. You can see straight away that he's much more comfortable with that sort of game, with the game in front of him, rather than with his back to goal. But that's constantly what he's been asked to do. And I would argue that after Ramsey, Reuben Colwell is the best number 10 at football club. So play him. And how can he get... And then with Reuben, how can Reuben be expected to get up to a place where he can do 90 minutes every week if he constantly gets taken off at 60 minutes?
Yeah, I think the club's treatment of Reuben leaves a lot of question marks. Yeah, look, he's had these growing pains over a number of years. So, you know, and I know this used to happen with Gareth Bale, believe it or not, that, you know, when he was young, Gareth, believe it or not, didn't even make the Wales schools team.
Mm.
A year later, he was playing under John Toshack, making a senior debut. But he was having these growing pains. And I've been told by people in the know with these things that they affect your coordination, your balance, you can't train, all that sort of thing. So that's clearly happened with Reuben as well. But I just feel that the shackles have to be released on him.
Yes.
You know, you have to. Had a, when Steve Morrison was manager, I had an hour, this part of 2 hours with him, one-to-one up at the Vale, which is where Cardiff's training base is. And I've got to say, a lot of what he said in private, I couldn't disagree with. He impressed me. But we had words over two players, yeah? One will remain nameless. I didn't particularly rate him, but he raved about him, yeah? But the other was Ruben. And I don't think he could fully comprehend the excitement from the fans towards what Ruben brought to the team. And I that Cardiff can't have a luxury player like that. But I think Cardiff have to have a luxury player like that. I think they really do. And, you know, you can't have, it's, you know, I think the Welsh under 21 manager, Matty Jones, actually did a brilliant job building Ruben's confidence back up. He said, you come in, you play 10 for me, I want you to be man of the match every game. And you actually see with Ruben's form to the under 21s, you see a player who's brimful of confidence. Now, look, of course, Championship football is several levels above that. Of course it is. We have to all accept that. But the principle of it remains the same, that if you're full of confidence, you don't think you're going to be hooked up half time or whatever, it's you're more likely to give of your best, I think. And I, you know, the not the anti-Ruben people, nobody's anti-Ruben, but the but those who are heavily question what Ruben Colwell brings to the team say to me, oh, he's only got 3 assists and 1 goal, stats, blah, blah, blah. I don't need stats. Number one, how many 90-minute games he had to build up those stats anyway. But no, I don't need stats to tell me that somebody can create space for himself, dribble past players, put a pass in, put a cross in, have shots on goal. I don't need stats to tell me that a player has ability. And he clearly has it in abundance. And really, I do think it would be wonderful if he could, if in every game, Errol could work two of Turnbull, Colwell and Ramsey into his starting team, because I just think that would change the dynamic for Cardiff. And it may be for that, you know, it may be that he could play Turnbull 8, Ramsey 10 and Colwell out wide for certain games. I don't see Ruben out wide, but crikey, Ben, Phil Foden plays, Jack Grealish plays. So sometimes
you can do it if they're fluid, can't you? If they're moving and interchanging.
So, but what we, you know, what the frustrating thing is that we always see two of Siopis, Wintle, Rouse, rather than two of the
more attacking.
And that sort of, I suppose, demonstrates Errol is a naturally negative manager, defensive manager, rather than an attacking manager. But I do think playing certainly at home against the lesser teams, at the very least, pick these ball players in your team. You know, pack the team with them if possible. But certainly pick two of those three in each game.
Yeah, there's been times this year where, like, we've played all season without the number nine, effectively.
Yes.
None of them have been very effective. There's been times this year where I thought, God, we'd be better off with almost like a false nine, putting Ruben as the focal point and having someone else behind him. But anyway, just on sort of kind of the points you just made, really, I agree with probably 99% of that. Like, for me, the way that Bullet sets up his team actually allows for Ruben to have a bit more freedom if you were to let him, because he sets it up. You know, the NG and Collins are not marauding forward past the wingers and, you know, overlapping non-stop, and the central defender's not pushing up into midfield, so we're going to get caught out. Like, it's quite a solid base, so you could allow him a bit of freedom. And another thing which I discussed with people the other day when we did a show was we seem to be the only team in football where the left winger and the right winger and the 10 or the striker, they all stay in the same place. Like, none of them, you never see Bowler and Grant swap wings for 20 minutes if they're not getting any change. Like, it seems, you know, and I understand the need for structure and being compact and being defensively sound, but it just feels like sometimes, like you said, like, let the shackles off a little bit and you might get different results. Because I know for another player, Carlin Grant has got some critics saying he hasn't scored enough and he's missed some chances. And, you know, he has missed a couple of chances. But I would also argue that he's probably been one of the most consistent forward players we've had. And he also, what you do know with him is that the left back will have support, whereas on the other side, Perry NG quite often gets isolated and outnumbered because the right wing is not given that same support. And
I don't think Josh Bowler should be in the team because he's not here next season.
No.
Cardiff's future is more important, so they should be picking players who are here next season. But I don't think you can question him coming back. I think he comes back too much. Not as much as Grant, I admit that, but he certainly does track back, I think, Bowler. You know, he may not track back.
He watched that Swansea goal from like 20 yards out as Perry NG had two.
Oh, listen, he's not without fault. Don't get me wrong, but he certainly tracks back. I think that's part of the problem, that the wingers are tracking back too much, both of them. And it all becomes chicken and egg because Cardiff do get the ball then and they slowly pass it around. By the time the wingers are back upfield where they should be, the opposition defence has reset, you know. And it goes back to what I said to you, that example the other day of Ramsey getting the ball and then it just coming straight back to the defence. And I've seen it with Perry NG a few times this season. He has this wonderful knack of suddenly cutting inside a player or two and getting Cardiff going forward, but then it just comes back, it's ponderous, the defence resets. So, you know, getting this ball in transition and attacking at pace in every sense just doesn't happen. And that's one of the reasons Cardiff have found, well, that's probably the fundamental reason why Cardiff have found a real issue to get goals from open play all season. You know?
Yeah, I think there's a lack of movement off the ball. With them, just going back to Ruben quickly, but my son is 15. He plays in the same position. So when we go to games, he will, rather than watch the game as a whole, he watches Ruben like as an individual, and he'll watch what he's doing. And for about 3 or 4 or 5 maybe games this year, he said to me, "Oh, you can see he starts off. He's picking up these lovely pockets of space, and either he gets the ball, will turn on it." And everyone is stood still. There's no running behind. There's no, you know, behind the fullback on the wings or anything like that. Everyone is static.
Except for Birmingham for those half hour,
20 minutes. Yeah. But then, so he ends up either going back or trying to do something.
Or coming feet way too deep.
And that's where my next point was going to be. He also said that we would look, and then I started watching then because he said that. And what happened is, Ruben Corwell picked up a nice little bit of space. I think it was might have been Wintle. Didn't see the pass or wasn't able to make it or, you know, whatever. He went backwards. So next time, Ruben came a bit deeper. And then by the second half, it was Birmingham at home. By the second half, Ruben was coming to get it off the centre-back.
Yeah.
And then even if he gets it, it's like he can't do anything with it from there, really.
Yeah.
But he came that deep because he had picked up good positions throughout the game, hadn't been found. And I think that's been frustrating for me to watch because I think the importance of having someone alongside Sioppis who can progress the ball up the field quickly and well, and I think it affected Sioppis. When Sioppis had that dip in form, I felt like it was because he was trying to almost do too much. He was trying to be the presser, the deepest midfielder, taking it off the defence and try and progress the ball and try and cover, and he was just getting a bit lost. And I just felt like we need to get him a partner who can do the right things. However, I would put this to you. I agree with you that Josh Bowler shouldn't be playing at the moment. We've got 3 games left. I said 2 games ago, with 5 to go, that I would have liked to have seen Ollie Tanner start the next 5 games. So the last 5 games, Ollie Tanner start him. Let's see if with some, you know, some constant games, is he going to be good enough genuinely, or is it, you know, is he ready? And then you can also then bring on Ashford for the last half an hour with an eye on maybe starting him for the last home game or the last couple of home games. And I said the same with Joel Corwell. I said start Turnbull and then maybe give Joel Corwell 10 minutes at the end. We haven't seen Corwell or Tanner much either, but for me, I'd like to see him building for the future. But what I was going to ask you is, Joel Corwell, by all accounts, is so highly rated by people within the club, by his manager, the first team managers also mentioned him as well. Like, he's so highly rated, but he's also rated outside of Cardiff in other championship teams. Do you think they should give him a chance now in these last three games in some form, or do you think it's probably a bit early? Because it's not often you can try young players without any pressure on the result in the championship.
Well, you know, I thought we should have seen him a little while back, to be honest with you, at home to Sunderland. And somebody said to me, well, it's not the right game for him. I think, well, what is the right game? Sunderland have got a bunch of kids themselves. It's a home game. Cardiff are safe. Sunderland are safe. You know, if we keep saying, oh, well, it's got to be the right game, it's got to be the right game. When is the right game? So, listen, I haven't seen enough of Joel Colwell to judge him, right? But people within the club tell me he's going to be better than his brother.
Yes.
And I'm very dismissive of that, right? But then it's reworded as he'll be more effective for us. Yeah. So it sounds like there are real high hopes that he's going to be a real dominant midfield force for that club for years to come. But the right time to play him will not be at the start of next season, away to Burnley if they come down or something like that. The right time is right here, right now, and it has been the last sort of few games. I think we, and the other thing, Cardiff have a history. I'm very defensive of that academy. I know it gets a lot of criticism, right? But I know the talent that comes through that academy. I know the results that they achieve at younger age levels now, from 8s up to 15s or so, against teams like Arsenal and Man United. I know the good results that they achieve.
And the 15s, so, the cup final today.
Well, there we are. I didn't know that, but that's, you know, I know that they won the Corey Price Cup at a certain age grade last season against teams like, you know, Arsenal, Chelsea, Slavia, you know, these are, you know, so there's real talent clearly within that academy. But for whatever reason, you know, I felt from the days of the Eddie May era, when the likes of Nathan Blake, Jason Perry, Damon Sill came through, that the Cardiff fans get some of their passion from seeing those young players on the pitch. They'll always offer a little bit of extra latitude to homegrown players. And I do think that next season, with Reuben Colwell, with Joel Colwell, with Isaac Davis returning, and he'll be a better player for his loan spell away, with Eli King returning, he'll be a better player for his loan spell away, with Kean Ashford, who I've heard rave reviews about for a number of years now, and Joel Bagan will come back a better player for his spell away. I do think that there is young talent there next season that Cardiff have an opportunity to utilise. I'm not saying you pick all six of them. Of course you don't, yeah? But there's an opportunity to actually use some of that talent now. And you supplement, you know, that's a nice little bonus. You know, you add Aaron Ramsey and a fit again Aaron Ramsey who just needs to rest his body now, have a good pre-season and come back for the new season. You know, you have a fit again Callum O'Dowd. That's like little group of new signings in its own right there. You throw in the new signings that I've mentioned, 3, 4, 5 really quality ones. Yes, there will have to be outgoings, but you've got a decent clutch of defenders there already. Siopis is a good player. Yeah, he lost his form a little bit, but there's no doubt in my mind that will come back, you know, because he's talented. There are still other players there that I haven't mentioned. You've mentioned Ollie Tanner. There's Callum Robinson factor to sort of think about. There's the Mitre factor to think about. I think there's enough depth to that squad next year to actually do something with the right manager. But those youngsters can't be overlooked as part of that. I think they need to be a part of that, and I think they can be. And clearly, Ruben is the kingpin of them all. But coming through, his name wasn't being mentioned. It was Kean Ashford's name that was the one that was being mentioned. So, and he looks a player, you know.
Yeah.
So, there's no point having an academy if Cardiff are not going to play their youngsters and just let them sort of leave or whatever.
Well, this is the frustrating thing, and I think the other side of that is as well is like, if you don't give them a chance, like sometimes a young player, you can play him in the first team in the league or the cup, like a league cup or something, and they struggle because they're not ready. But then sometimes you see a young player go into the first team and it's like they've played 200 games and they take to it, like a duck to water, but you don't know until you're able to try it. And I would argue that we would have got more out of seeing Joel Colwell and Keane Ashford, Tanner, Ruben play for the last five games of the season in the Championship than if they start and play 90 minutes of every pre-season game in the summer. Because Joel Colwell could be amazing in pre-season, but the manager still won't start him in the first Championship game of the season because he won't be sure if he'll be able to. Whereas if he's had five decent games now, then he goes on pre-season and does well, then he might.
I do. The reason one of the reasons we're not seeing them is because of the contract situation, obviously, isn't it? And Bullock clearly thinks he needs to have finished with a flourish, winning a number of games to persuade Vincent Tan to give him a new deal. And and in a situation like that, a manager will always err on the side of experience as opposed to youth.
Yeah, and that's the thing, isn't it? Do you think the club has made? Do you think, in your opinion, that the club has made that decision now, or do you think it's still
on the manager?
Yeah.
Well, the board definitely want to keep.
Yes.
Definitely want to keep Errol. It's down to the owner. No, I don't think he's made the decision one way or the other. I really don't.
Incredible.
And you could say, well, that's very indecisive for a multimillionaire who's been a phenomenally successful businessman. But football's different.
Yes.
And listen. You say it's incredible, and it is, but I have an element of sympathy for Vincent Tan in this because I know a lot of fans who are undecided on this as well.
Yeah.
I really do. You know, even I, as a massive Bullock backer, I've had to sort of row back a little bit, thinking, can we keep seeing this negativity? Can we keep seeing him picking all these defensive midfielders, making the kind of substitutions I mentioned earlier against Millwall, that sort of thing?
Well, I guess if we play devil's advocate as well, say they give him a new contract, but like you mentioned earlier, if they back him and he gets a few players in and he gets those young players back, and then coming into Christmas next year, we're still seeing this type of football. The fans are not going to be happy, the owner's not going to be happy, but they'll have just given him a new contract, which they would then have to pay out if he is still... You can see, I can't see why there's the indecision, but then that's when you've got to have a conversation with the manager and say, this is the style of football or the negative tactics is maybe not good enough, but we've seen enough that we think you can be the right guy, but you need to make some tweaks.
I think those conversations have taken, well, I know those conversations have taken place, and with certain summer targets, he says that we'll be able to play a more progressive style of football. So yeah. I think his attitude is it's a bit of a holding job at the moment.
Yeah.
So obviously we won't know till the proof comes in the pudding. I still think that he is a naturally defensive manager, and we see that from the fact that he picks two holding midfield players all the time.
Yeah.
At home, against lesser teams at home as well. Mm. So will that change? I don't know. I don't know.
You know, when we played Swansea at home, that was one of the best performances from Cardiff City I've seen in such a long time. And maybe it was the enjoyment of seeing Swansea chase the ball around as Cardiff knocked it about. And after years of seeing Martinez teams when we used to play Swansea, and Cardiff would just be chasing the ball from that minute a lot of the time, just because of the way Swansea played. It was quite refreshing as a fan to watch that and see Cardiff be the team who was popping it about. But we were playing with a bit of purpose and a bit of aggression. And I remember in the games coming up to that game, I had been saying that Jamalu Collins looks like a player who's come back from a long-term injury, and he almost needs that big tackle just to get his confidence. And ironically, I think it was about 10 minutes into that Swansea game at home, he went flying in. There was a big freedom, and it was almost like everyone held their breath to see if he was going to get up. And he got up, and you could see that he was like, okay, let's go. And I thought he'd been very good all season then, Jamalu Collins. People forget, he was out for a year.
He's got a lot of critics amongst the fan base, he's been part of the negativity. You know, you're watching games at home, he's getting it, going back to the goal, getting it, going back to the goal, getting it, going back, you know.
Did you notice the change in him, though? the last couple of games where he's been right up.
I was about to say, irrespective of that, I actually think his performances in the last, you know, I thought he was poor in the second half of Millwall, so temporarily, yeah. But other than that, I think he was one of the bright spots in the first half of that game, and there weren't many others. But I think that he's got better defensively in the last few games, and maybe that's given him more of a freedom to start getting forward. Because the Jabalu Collins we saw when he first came to the club, and Steve, look, we only saw him for four games, but he looked a swashbuckler. He looked a wonderful signing, you know. And the Jabalu Collins we've seen for the majority of this season hasn't been that same player.
Cautious.
Yeah, but he's cautious is a good word. But defensively, I thought he'd start to get it back a little bit more. And maybe that's given him the confidence to start going forward more. In terms of that Swansea game, I watched a rerun of it the other night. And of course, ran the show. But I'll tell you, going back to what you said earlier about Carlin Grant was magnificent. When I look back at that game, you know, Wintle was the other midfielder that night. It wasn't Rowles. But I thought Ramsey and Grant just sort of ran that game, you know. And of course, Tanner obviously was the match winner.
Of course,
of course he was. And he will be in Cardiff City folklore as a result of those 20 minutes when he came on, or whatever it was. But you saw that day what Ramsey and Grant were pedigree footballers. You see what they can do. And if Cardiff could get Carl, they could do a lot worse than try and get Carl and Grant back next season. That's notwithstanding they need another winger, even though Isaac Davis is coming back. They need a fast, tricky winger on the other side, but it'd be good to get Grant back.
So, yeah, I'm the same as you. I rewatched that, and I rewatched Huddersfield. I think it was the Leicester game. Leicester game, we missed, Mate missed a one-on-one chance just before they scored the winner, didn't he? And that's been a pattern this year. The striker, whoever's been the number nine, has ended up missing
I said earlier, when you're talking about Leicester away, obviously, yeah? So I said earlier that for 20, 25 minutes of that second half, Cardiff went toe-to-toe with a brilliant Leicester lineup. Went toe-to-toe, and I thought, yeah, this team can do something like the bullet. They look really good here. Yeah, Maito did miss,
it was a chance to score.
And I remember Leicester fans were saying after the game at CCS, when Cardiff just played really negatively and ineffective, roll over, tickle our tummies and beat, you know, we can't believe the difference between these two teams. And that sums up what he said. Cardiff were really adventurous and looked as if they would play a bit of, you know, football with a purpose. I won't call it swashbuckling, but it was certainly football with pace and tempo, and then suddenly it just fell off the cliff. And the Leicester performances sum that up.
The biggest difference I noticed when I rewatched those games compared to the most recent ones is the lack of movement. When our midfield, when anyone's got the ball, it's the lack of, everyone is very, like, this is my area, I'm staying here. Whereas early in the season, in that Swansea game, players are interchanging. We did this thing at the start of the season where Perry NG would push up into midfield and almost become a holding midfielder, and Jamadu Collins was pushing up. That's gone. And we don't press anymore either, I can't remember who it was, but it's the Swansea away game. We just let them walk up the pitch, just knocking it around, didn't press, and we did it against Birmingham away in the first half. It was like, they don't press until the team gets about 30 yards out. And I couldn't, and I was like, that's tactical, that's not. Because if you think, if those players not pressing was against what the coaches and the manager have drilled and what they've told them to do, they'd be saying, you know, screaming at them, go and press, go and, you know, press as a group, go together. And they were, and it didn't change, and we've kept doing it game after game, which means it's a tactical tweak that's happened at some point, and I don't really understand the why, other than he thinks that the players
can't press,
doesn't make any sense when you see that we did it earlier in the season.
It is frustrating because, you know, particularly at home, you'll suddenly see, you know, the opposition have the ball, and suddenly you see 11 players lined up in Cardiff's half.
Yeah.
It's been quite a frequent sight. So they clearly are letting them come to a certain level of the pitch, and at that point, maybe they just think they can't press the entire length of the pitch, so they can only do it in those sections and then look for transition football. But as I said earlier, the transition football doesn't happen because it's so ponderous in the way they pass the ball around.
Yeah, if you're going to be a transitional team, you've got to be, it's got to be quick, haven't it? When you win the ball, your wingers have got to go, your striker's got to go, and you've got to kind of move with urgency.
See, I still think, you know, you look at that, you know, you've got Siakas, you've got Turnbull, you've got Colwell, and you've got Ramsey when fit. That's not a bad midfield, you know. That's not a bad midfield. Players who can keep the ball, move the ball around. I think there can be goals from that midfield as well. But they need wingers further up the pitch, and they need a centre forward who can link it all together. And these are issues that, you know, have held the team back all season. So in many ways, Bullet, you know, to think that he's got the team to 11th as we speak without that proper centre forward all season is probably quite a remarkable achievement, isn't it, if we're honest?
Yeah, I think it's massive to do a whole season. I wanted to just ask you like a couple of questions. I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit, so feel free to tell me to get lost if you don't want to answer any of them. First one is, I'm going to give you sort of four players, and I just want you to say whether you'd like to keep them, sell them. Well, if you were in charge, what would you do with them? So the first one is Harry Ng, being heavily linked with a variety of places. If you were in charge, would you keep him, or would you use him to fund back in whoever the manager may be?
Probably use him to fund a deal, because I don't think it'd be difficult to get a really good right back in where I think other areas of the team need strengthening. But, you know, clearly he's a talented player, and I'd rather he stays. But if that opportunity is there, he's one of the ones that I suppose they could cash in on.
Yeah, him and Mark McGuinness, in terms of their age, their profile, their skill set, I could see why lower Premier League clubs would look at them and think, oh, they could do a job.
I don't think Cardiff can get rid of Mark McGuinness just yet.
No, I don't either. But I just mean in terms, I could see why clubs would look at them. And like, I think Perry Engie is probably the best right back in the Championship alongside Walker Peters. So the next one is Nat Phillips.
Oh, I think they've got to try and get him back.
Well, he's out of contract, isn't he, in the summer?
I think he's got another year.
Is he? I thought he was on a free this year.
No, I think he's got another year. Okay. I may be wrong there, but I'm pretty certain he has.
Okay.
I'll try and get him back.
And if he is on a free, I would try and work something out with his wages. He seems to like it that year. So if you could work something out where he would come on a free.
Try and get him back. He's been,
imagine what we'd have been like with McGuinness out and him not there.
Yeah, no, he's the one, not shining light at Millwall, but he was the one player who stood up there. I thought he was magnificent away to Birmingham as well. I think there's a quality Championship defender in that Phillips. So
yeah, he's good on the ball as well.
Back. Yeah,
Carlin Grant, divisive.
I'm almost torn on that one, like I have a very injury one. I think there's a player there in a more free-flowing team who can score a lot more goals than we've seen this season.
I agree.
So I'm inclined to say I'd like to see that potential unlocked and get a really good winger on the other side of the pitch who's fast and tricky, who can offer a cutting edge on that side. Or Grant plays on the right and the other winger plays on the left, as you said earlier.
Well, we've got O'Dowda as well, isn't it? So we've got O'Dowda can come back on the left.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised if we see Ruben off the right next year if Aaron Ramsey's fit. I wouldn't be surprised to see Ruben come in from wide, which I'm not. I've said early in the season, I don't want to see Ruben Colwell wide. I want to see him in the 10. But I think if it can be quite free-flowing and fluid between those three who play behind the striker, you can afford to have Ruben on the right, Ramsey in the middle, Grant or whoever, and then if they interchange, it doesn't really matter too much.
No.
The next player on my list is Josh Bowler.
Oh, I think he can go back.
No? Wouldn't that be next year on loan?
No, he's disappointed me this year. Literally this year, to be honest with you. I was quite excited by his arrival. Mm. And I thought he did a, you know, he was doing well in those early away games that I mentioned. But literally, since the turn of the year, the irony is he's actually, he scored one wonder goal away from home, didn't he, to win a game. And then he had that lovely link up with Ruben Colwell the other night to win the game against Birmingham, which shows what he can do, shows that he can score goals. I would be inclined to look for a different style of...
More consistent.
Different style. Well, no wingers are consistent at this level. That's the nature of the beast. They're not consistent generally, but they particularly aren't at the Championship. Otherwise, they'd be in the Premier League. But I'd be inclined to look in a slightly different direction there.
Wilson Esbrand?
No, I don't see any value in that, to be honest with you, do you? I mean, I think they've got Jamaloo Collins, they've got Callum O'Dowd that can do that role, and Joel Bagan's coming back. And
I think it probably depends on what they think or what they're going to do with Joel Bagan. He hasn't had a great deal of luck while he's been in Belgium. He's been set off and injured and things. But I think if Joel Bagan's in the squad next year, it doesn't seem much point in having Wilson Esbrand, because, like you say, you've got too many.
The jury's out for me on Bagan still, because when he first came into the team, and Neil Harris and others were talking about, you know, and coaches were really talking about to me behind the scenes, I couldn't really see it. Mm-hmm. And then he had a spell out during that, but I can't remember if he was dropped or injured, and then he came back in, and he looked a wonderful left back for a period. He was swashbuckling, getting forward, scoring goals, defensively sound. I thought, and then for whatever reason, he lost his place in the team again, and we've barely seen him since. So, but I like to think about that little period that we saw around about Christmas, if memory serves me right. I think, you know what, there's a player there.
Yeah, that's the player that's in there.
That's the player that's in there. And maybe a year away with a little bit more regular football, if not as much as the other two, about Davis and King. You know, players do improve when they go out on loan. Beckham went on loan, you know.
Yeah,
and Harry Kane went on loan. It happens. Frank Lampard played for Swansea, you know. It happens. When players... Eddie Newton came to Cardiff for played brilliantly, went back to Chelsea and won the FA Cup for Chelsea, you know, as a key member of their midfield. So it happens. Schmeichel's another example. So hopefully these players come back on loan, and I've no doubt they'll all be better footballers as a result of it. They'll have grown up a bit.
My one worry with Isaac Davis, it's not whether I think he's going to come back better, because I think he absolutely will. My one worry is that there's some far bigger clubs than Cardiff City sniffing around him already. He was linked in the papers the other week to Monaco and Anderlecht.
That won't be very good use of their academy resource if that happens.
No. But from his point of view, if Monaco, you know, a Champions League club effectively, or sometimes Anderlecht, historically a massive club, come knocking, is it an opportunity you can turn down? I don't know. I would love to see him back next year, because I think I do look at it and I think that how we've looked at in that number nine position this year, I just think, God, you know, would Isaac Davis not have been better than what we've had? I
can't get out of my mind the way Isaac Davis and Ruben Colwell, when they were much younger, they're still very young, how they just, not tore Liverpool's defence apart, but the way they linked for that goal against Van Dijk and co, the way they won a game at QPR together to get Cardiff back in, they were 1-0 down and 1-2-1. But there's ability there. There is unquestionable ability there that needs to be tapped into on a more regular basis, I would say, from both of them.
Yeah, 100%. Next on my list is Callum Robinson. So I must be true to myself. I've been quite vocally critical of Robinson. I think I've tried to base it very much on what we see and what we see on the pitch. Unfortunately, I've heard some stuff where, you know, he's kind of fallen out with the manager and stuff, but I don't think he's been good enough, and I think his attitude's been quite poor at times. So for me, I would sell because I believe he's on relatively high wages.
Yeah.
And I think that there would be clubs who would be interested in taking him because he is a very, very good footballer.
Well, he's one of the ones that could net a fee. Yeah. Mm. So could be part of the rebuild. I just feel it would be crying shame for a player of his talent to leave the club when I think there's a player there at this level. I really do.
I wonder if
him playing centre forward, you mentioned Isaac Davis, would he not be a much better centre forward, being able to spin and make the exact kind of runs you were talking about earlier that players aren't really making you feel? I think there's a player there. So
you know,
I want to see that player come out in him rather than let him go personally.
Do you know what's funny? So you just reminded me of something which I said in pre-season this year, which was, and I said it like week after week in the build-up to the season, I said, Callum Robinson is the best finisher at our football club. Play him through the middle, play him as a striker, and he obviously hasn't all season. Now, I haven't been impressed with some of his attitude and body language at times. He's not the only one, mind. There's one or two which I think of. Let themselves down a little bit. But also, I agree with you. Why isn't he playing through the middle? Like, he's done it before and he's done it very effectively. Why have we played other players who have... I give, you know, I'm all for trying Mete or trying Atete or trying Jeju. None of them have really lit the world on fire. So why is Robinson, do you think, not being given that chance to play through the middle?
I don't know. I mean, he's played him at 10, hasn't he, more than, you know, I don't see Robinson as a 10. You know, not a modern-day 10. That, you know, modern-day 10 is more of an attacking midfielder, than whereas I see Robinson as a second striker. But he could... I've no doubt he could flourish up there. The problem with him staying would be, on the basis... a centre forward comes in, and you've got Cole, Grant, and Ramsey vying for that 10 position, and you've got, sorry, not Cole, Turnbull, and Ramsey, and you've got two wingers. I don't see where Robinson fits into the starting 11, and that's part of the problem. So I don't know. But there's a player there. Cardiff have not seen the best of him. When he signed, I thought that was an excellent capture, and I feel that the club should. Just keep on with him and still try and bring the best out of him.
Do you think him and Bullock can both stay?
Oh, look, it's all about management. Is all about dealing with man management. Whether you're a football manager or whether you're the boss of a council or whether you're running a foreman on a factory, it's all about man management, isn't it? Mm. You know, it's Bullock's responsibility to man manage Robinson and get the best out of him, as is the case with every player. If every player was the same, it would be incredibly boring. Everybody needs to be treated different in life, and there's an example of it. I think it's Bullock's responsibility to manage him and get the best out of him.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, I've been very much leaning towards he'd be on my list to sell.
And I get that.
But then I agree with everything that you just said in that, like, he's got the quality. Like, he is a good footballer at this level. And maybe, if you look at it from his point of view, maybe his frustration's warranted. I don't know. You don't know what, you know, you can't see inside his head. So I guess unless he talks about it, you will know. But I thought I also am a big believer that like not being professional and like kind of throwing, you know, not that he has, I'm just saying generally speaking, you shouldn't throw your toys at the pram and just, if you don't get your own way or you're not playing, like, you've got to all be pulling in the same direction. And then if you've got an issue, go and air it privately with the person who is appropriate to do so.
Indeed,
with.
But that comes back to what I said. It's about how you manage these individuals as well, isn't it? How you manage situations like that.
Of course.
It's come down quite hard on him. Hopefully that...
Not the only player, man. He came down on hard. Who else? He came down on a couple of players at different times, haven't he, this season?
Yeah, but hopefully lessons are learned here. And, you know, because I think there's a player there, Robinson. Where he actually fits into the 11, I'm not sure, if they get the players they want that season. But I just think, you know, I'd hate to see a situation where he suddenly goes to a Hull or a Middlesbrough or a Sunderland or an Ipswich or whatever and suddenly scores 18 goals next season.
It's almost guaranteed, isn't it? It's the most Cardiff thing.
Why have Cardiff let that talent out of the building when he was under contract?
But like you said earlier, with Grant, with some other players, sometimes it's the being in the right team or the right tactics and that sort of thing can sometimes be the difference between a player. I had a conversation with someone on Twitter on Saturday night about Josh Bowler, and he's kind of questioned whether, is he perhaps inconsistent and is he constantly cutting in because the way we play doesn't suit his game? And I was like, maybe he does need a slightly different system. I would really like to have seen Josh Bowler play off the left, because I'd be really intrigued to see if he looks the same as he does, or whether he suddenly looks like a real player, because I just think he's got all the attributes. You can see there's a player there, very skillful, direct, quick, got a shot on him. And ironically, I think the majority of his assists this year have gone when he's gone on the outside and scuffed the ball across with his wrong foot. It's a tricky one.
Yeah.
There was one other player I was going to ask you about, and I've forgotten who it was now. When Maite came in, I was so excited when Maite came in, because he always seemed to score against us. Had a really good record at Reading. I thought, that's a really clever signing. That's not a Cardiff signing, almost. Because it was like, I felt like it was a really intelligent, championship proven, scored goals. And I haven't been sold on him. A couple of my friends, they really like him. They just think he's better wide. But there was a period against Birmingham away where he was dropping so deep, and he was crossing the ball in, and it was like he was crossing it to where he should be.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't understand that. Like, I thought that showed a bit of...
I remember the incident that happened on the left-hand side. Mm. That's exactly what happened. He got the ball off of Carlin Grant and crossed it. And the only person in the box was actually Bowler, who was beyond the far post. So he crossed it to where he should have been. What he should have done is left to the ground, got into the best of gap to get into the box. I would keep him, though, because I think that there's... I was like you, I thought that, again, that's part of the very clever summer acquisitions that they made. He's fast, he's powerful, he doesn't really take a step backwards. And I would... I don't really understand his goal output. He's a better... His goal output should be better in terms of the player he is than we've seen with Cardiff. So I think it has to be down to Cardiff's style of football this season. Listen, I've said before, prime Cristiano Ronaldo might have struggled to score this Cardiff team at times.
We don't create much chances.
It goes back to what I said. It's about the... it's all interlinked. It's about the ponderous nature of the football, which allows opposition defences to reset completely. So I think Maita, again, I think if Maita went to another club and he bags 10 to 12 goals, we'd be thinking, how has he been let out of the building? I'd be inclined to keep him. I'm not saying he's a regular starter, but I think he would have a role to play in modern-day football from the bench.
So to finish off, last question, I guess, and I will answer it as well, but I'll let you answer it first, is if you could sign one player for Cardiff next year, within reason, so not Mbappe or something like that, but like if there was one player that you could sign for Cardiff City in the summer, whether it be a loan or whether it be a permanent, who would that be?
So I can't have Vinicius Junior then?
No.
Jude Bellingham?
Yeah. I think that Joe, maybe, a push. It's a difficult question when you're put on the spot.
I think that the two pressing areas for the team are centre and midfield and centre forward, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
It's pointless getting the centre forward if you're not sorting out the centre and midfield and the speed of the team, the service and all that. So although I'd love to say a Kiefer Moore type of figure, I think something like Alex Moa at West Brom, dominant, and he's left-footed as well, a dominant type of midfielder who plays forward as a first point of call, but is bossy enough to help the team draw. I think that's sort of area of the team that needs strengthening.
So I'm on record already of saying that if Birmingham City go down, Cardiff City should break the bank and do everything possible to get Jordan James, because I think he could be that person next to Cy Hoppus. Wouldn't mind seeing Kumas Junior on loan, but I don't know whether he's ready to play first team.
I like Jordan James. He's impressed me with Wales, I have to say. And he impressed me when he played for Birmingham in the 1-0 win at CCS earlier in the season. I just think a more experienced figure is needed there for where Cardiff will be next season in terms of where Cardiff wants to take them. And I think Moa would probably fit that bill.
Yeah. I mean, at this point in time, I'd take either, in fairness. But you are right. But like, I was saying, I was having a conversation yesterday with someone where someone asked me, what loan players would you take from the Premier League, like young players that you know, like the ones which come for a season and then you never see them again. And I basically said, well, the first thing I would do is I'd phone up Man United and say, who from your under-18s team is available? Because they're currently got 100% record and just come off the back of beating Liverpool 9-1. And they've got, I've heard of three of them. So for me to have heard of three, you know, under-18s, one of which used to play for Cardiff, funny enough. I can't pronounce his name, but embarrass myself now. Biancari or something like that, yeah. Played a few games, doing quite well. But there's a few players. There's a left back, ironically, who plays for them. He's 17. He looks like a real player.
Yeah, left back's not a problem for Cardiff.
I know, that's the one
position. Whether it's a problem or not, there's enough players there to fill that role.
I think even if Perry NG were to stay, I don't think right back, an additional right back is an urgent thing, but I think if we don't get Nat Phillips, I would look to get another right back, because I think Perry NG might end up getting shifted in inside more. I really like McGuinness as well. I thought actually we looked really good with McGuinness because he progressed the ball from defence really well. And if Phillips was there, I wouldn't be surprised to see Bullock play three centre backs. Anyway, he's done it a couple of times at certain points.
Or become even more defensive.
Yeah, three centre backs, two holding midfielders,
two full backs,
not wing backs, full backs.
Yeah, two full backs.
One up front.
Let's hope it's more progressive than that.
I think I tend to agree with you that a really good progressive number 8 and a number 9, and I think the rest of the pieces.
I still think Joe Riles has got a role to play.
Yeah, 100%. 100%.
I think, you're not going to get Joe Riles starting anywhere remotely resembling.
Just like Ramsey, you've got to be realistic, haven't you? Those two are not going to start every game at this stage in their career. But then that's where your Ruben Colwells, your Joel Colwells can be effective, because they can fill in for those players when they need a rest or they're injured or whatever it may be. It's going to be interesting. It's never boring anyway. And by the time this podcast comes out on Saturday, something will have probably happened.
Yeah. It is never dull. Trust me, from all the years I've covered football, Cardiff City there's always a story going on at Cardiff City, and so this season is just a microcosm of my 30 years of covering the club. It's an incredible roller coaster ride.
Let me ask you something quickly, because we've spent so much time talking about the current season. What's your favourite memory covering Cardiff?
Oh, crikey.
I follow that upside, all right. What's your favourite memory covering Cardiff? But also, who have you fallen out with, the most, or the worst, or the biggest way over the years?
It's a good story. You fall out with everybody in my job, trust me. But the mature individuals
move past it.
And then you become their best. I've had the riot act read to me by managers behind the scenes, but following day they'll ring me up with a story. It's almost like it didn't happen, I can't separate. There's three eras for me. There was the Warnock era. I thought that was special because I felt Neil did more than just win promotion for Cardiff City. He brought the football club back together again. I remember, you know, since Darth has considered the club went up into the Premier League, but I remember going to a pre-season friendly at Taftswell of all places, a lovely summer July evening, and the place was flooded out with Cardiff, and I just thought, you know what, this is nice, he's connecting with the people again. Mm-hmm. And it became a bit disparate, hadn't it, you know, after the Slade years and the Harrogate era. So I just thought Warnock sort of brought the club back together again, so that was important. Obviously, I loved the Malky years because there was a cup final against Liverpool, won the league, and I was very close to Malky for a while. He was brilliant. He came into the office, signed a shirt from the Sun, did all sorts of things. I was very close to him, very good. But then,
I've heard he's an absolute top bloke.
I then got a message back, basically. I won't say I fell out with him because I didn't fall out with him, but I got a message back saying that he was unhappy that I had taken Vincent Tan's side. And all that, and I could tell, well, there's a power struggle going on here, isn't there? And there was only ever going to be one winner, and that we know that. Yeah, that would be the case with any manager or owner. So I suppose to a degree, I fell out with Malky without actually falling out with him in terms of a row. But I can't help but go back, and I know, you know, my children wouldn't understand this, and I know people of a certain generation just wouldn't get this, but I can't help but then a lot of people would. I can't help but go back to that Eddie May era. And look, it was fourth division football, League Two football, if you like. League Two today, if you like. But, you know, Cardiff had been a complete mess, and suddenly they're getting 12,000 to 20,000 crowds for games against Barnet and Shrewsbury and Wrexham in the Welsh Cup semi-final and so on. And I'll never forget going to Scunthorpe the day Cardiff won the league. And 5,000 to 6,000 Cardiff fans travelled up to Scunthorpe for the day, you know? And Nathan Blake told me a story once, which I was a bit dismissive of, but he's probably right. He said he was in a dressing room at Bolton. There was a former Newcastle player talking about Newcastle 4,000 to a game once. And Blake, he said, I can trump that. And he gave the example of 5,000 Cardiff fans going up to Scunthorpe for that game.
It sounds made up, doesn't it?
That era was, you know, I was particularly close to Eddie, really close to him. After a game, he'd invite three of us. It was a very small team that followed Cardiff in those days. He invited us into his little office. He'd have a fag in his hand, his little office underneath the stand at Edmonium Park, fag in his mouth, bottle of beer in his hand, and he just... You know, they were wonderful. It's very different to today, where everything is structured at a press conference with branding behind the individuals, and it's all live, and so they can't say anything slightly but untoward, a bit like me on this. Yeah, back then, in the privacy of that room, Eddie would fill us in about what this player was doing, why he dropped that player, what was happening here, who was going to be picked for the next. So we were able to write in a far more informed manner. And we had a wonderful relationship with Eddie back in the day. So I think he and Warnock, who I was also very close to, were my favourite two Cardiff managers. So either of those eras probably just trumps it. But you can't really beat Cardiff playing Liverpool at Wembley.
It's incredible.
You know, this is not Bradford City that Swansea played, by the way. And that's not to belittle their achievement.
No.
I think they beat Chelsea and Arsenal to get that far. Yeah. But this is Liverpool against Cardiff. And I remember Steven Gerrard saying after that game, which obviously Liverpool won on penalties, how magnificent he thought the Cardiff fans were.
Mm.
And that's what it was. You had 35,000 Liverpool fans making the passionate din they always make. You had 35,000 Cardiff fans doing the same. That was just a wonderful occasion. It's just a shame about the end result.
But then, do you know what? Like I always say, like that, thinking back to the Kenny Miller moment is like head in your hands. It's like, oh, what could have been? But equally, that moment just before when Ben Turner scores is one of my greatest, like, just as you used the word earlier, like a microcosm, like
that
moment was so special when Ben Turner scores.
And he sort of almost scored.
Yes.
It came back, so you're almost cheering as he, right? And then he just managed to put the rebound in.
Yeah, I got told off by the stewards. at Wembley.
That was one of the iconic moments. But the other one I loved was a 0-0 draw at home to Charlton, which, you know, earned promotion, you know, and seeing everybody flood on the pitch that night. It was Tuesday night, as I remember, you know.
Carrying Kev.
You know, wonderful moments. Another one that stands out for me, there's so many, just very quickly, so I know we've got to wind up. Another one that stands out for me is, this is an unsung one, but do you remember the League Cup final against Crystal Palace? It was 1-0 to Palace, and then it was a packed out capacity CCS for the second game. And the tension that night, you know, when you're trying to overhaul a 1-0 deficit, the tension that night was right. But I will never forget that evening, Peter Whittingham and Stephen McPhail, the coolest customers on the pitch, absolutely running the show. And I looked at them that night and thought, these are two special ones. To play like this, you compare that with the way Cardiff played against Swansea recently or something. For two players to take that pressure and to deal with that pressure the way they did that night is something that is still ingrained in my memory, you know?
Yeah, they're special players.
I was never a particularly great fan of McPhail, but crikey, that
when you look back,
that night, him and Whittingham, oh, what players, what talent, what players they were. Yeah,
incredible. Incredible. Yeah. Dave Jones' era, obviously, while we're on talking eras, I think deserves credit because I think he didn't quite get us over the line, but I think he set a lot of the ground.
That was the most exciting Cardiff team. I mean, you turned up those days at Nuneaton or CCS expecting Cardiff to score four goals. But it was the antithesis of what we've got today. Yeah. Where if you get one, you're lucky. Yeah, I was incredible. But by the same token, I was watching, spookily, I was watching that QPR, the four-year plan documentary the other night, where I didn't realise it's been out for a number of years, I've been told, right? But as part of that, they showed Neil Warnock winning the league that year with QPR, certainly winning promotion that year with QPR. Neil's team was nearly near as good as Cardiff's team that year. Othroyd, Bellamy, Chopper players, you know. But
how we missed out on that team.
They obviously won it because Neil Warnock was a master manager who sort of got that team over the line, you know. That Cardiff team really should have done it then.
Yeah. Yes, they should. With those players and that quality, we should have got over the line, I think. But there we go. It's the joys of Cardiff City, it's the joys of following Cardiff City, whether as a fan or a journalist or anything else.
Indeed.
Paul, it's been an absolute pleasure, mate. I really enjoyed it.
It's okay.
Good to chat as always, and I'm sure we'll get you back on so we can delve more into your memories and stories and open up your brain a little bit more and talk about Wales and Cardiff and your books and the rest of it.
Okay.
But for now, appreciate your time. Thank you very much. And
no worries. I'm going to have to go and buy my season tickets now for the summer. So,
Got to get them. Appreciate your time. Thank you very much, guys. Please do like, share, subscribe, all that good stuff. Thanks, Rob. Sports Social Podcast Network.